This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. Every Tuesday at the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, we highlight difference makers in our community working within the construct of the NOLA Coalition, many of whom have been in business working in the trenches long before the NOLA Coalition, but all coming together, recognizing that we're trying to improve our city on so many different fronts. Today's no different. We're joined by Derek Henderson with Don't Stop Dreaming. Derek, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Newell. How you feeling, man?
Doing great. I just wish this Francine character would just get on out of here and get it over
with. Yeah, you're right. I'm at home watching it myself, trying to see what the update and if anything has changed.
Yeah, always something. But Derek, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, talk about the mission and vision of Don't Stop Dreaming.
Don't Stop Dreaming is a mentorship program that helps children, the inner city children that are usually parents or deceased, at risk, or housed in prison, and we try to put them on the right path. And one of our main goals is start teaching these kids how to dream again, because the average kid, they don't dream anymore. And they only believe in only what they see in their communities and in their neighborhoods. So we try to change that narrative over about Don't Stop Dreaming. Well, we're doing pretty good with it. But yeah, we just changed the narrative.
How do y'all go about doing that?
Well, we exposed them to a lot of things. We did a lot of field trips this summer. We went to NASA. We went to Stern's facility over in Mississippi. We went to Swaybox Studio. All that was put on by GNO Inc. We went to Leviton Lighting Company. So you have to expose them. And if not, they'll never know, because as the words to be said, the next 5 to 7 years, AI will be taking over. So we have to introduce these kids, because the jobs that we have now, the waiters and the truck drivers, they will no longer exist. So we have to bring in some more STEM programming to these kids. And that's one of our main goals, to involve them into more STEMming.
You know, it's interesting. I never really thought about that connection. It's hard to dream to do or accomplish or otherwise if you know very little about what's actually out there and the broad opportunities that are presented, right?
That is correct. You know, something humor is no. When I was a kid, in my senior year, they asked you all in your yearbook, what do you want to be? And I wanted to be an underwater welder. And I'm claustrophobic. So just the hilarious part of it, I was dreaming. Yeah, I'm claustrophobic, and I wanted to be an underwater welder. I'll never forget that. And it just showed you that when we were younger, we had a lot of dreams and aspirations to be something instead of an athlete.
Well, it's interesting how many people wanted to be something as a result of watching Jacques Cousteau, right?
That is correct.
And when you think about that type of presentation, you don't get that in today's world, do you?
No, not at all. That's why I have, and I spoke to over GNO about this little kid that I have in my program, and he's only 9 years old. His name is James Hill, and he's a perfect story of Don't Stop Dreaming. He's been attending the Junior Olympics since he was 6 years old. And the third, what did he tell you, Newell? The third year is the charm. He won the Olympics. He won the AAU Olympics this year in 2024 in Greensboro, North Carolina. You ready for this? He won the 100, he ran a 12.8. He ran a 200 and ran a 26.7. And the year before that, the pivotal part of his story is that the year before that in 2023, he was disqualified. because he fell from breaking the world record. He fell at the finish line. So this year was a charm. This is the third year, and Judge Russo gave him a proclamation. We call this August 3rd now. It's James Hill Jr., you know, Day in New Orleans. And he's a resident of New Orleans and a resident of North, and he's one of our own. And he's a part of Don't Stop Dreaming. That's the perfect part of a kid that didn't stop dreaming.
And he's now holds the title of the fastest nine-year-old in the nation,
in the
right?
That is correct, sir. That is correct. You got to hear the times, man. He ran in 112.8, turned around and ran again. And I think this event is held for like 5 days, a whole week. And, you know, it's like a consolation. You know, you're up next, you lose, you go home. And this kid finished August 3rd of 2024.
I don't know if I could do a 12.8 in my car, quite frankly.
Man, listen, I can't do it going to the kitchen. What? Yeah. But that just, it just shows you, man, no matter what your age is in life, you can dream, and your dreams can be achieved.
Derek, what was the reaction of all of the other kids in the program that have come in contact with James?
Man, listen, he doesn't know, but we're preparing this big old little ceremony for him. We have a banner being made, and it's a lot of action pictures of him on the banner, achieving when he was running each race. And the kids were so overwhelmed. So now you have some of the heavier kids. Now they want to be track stars and all that. No, kid, you'll be a shot putter. You won't be running 100, son. Yeah.
Right.
But it also teaches these other kids that it can be done. It can be done. And that's why I'm glad to have him a part of my program.
So you've been doing this for how long now?
Oh, my gosh. About over 20 years.
What do you see as your biggest challenge today as opposed to what your biggest challenge was 20 years ago?
Peer pressure. Yeah. Peer pressure is one of your biggest problems all over the country. And some of the children's biggest challenges will be their friends or their so-called friends. And I tell my kids all the time, you pick a friend like you pick a fruit. Don't let the person pick you to be a friend. You pick your own friend. And keep your circle very, very small, because that's going to be one of the hardest challenges in the world. When these children, like we say, when they jump off the porch, meaning when they go into life, they can't jump back on the porch. So we have to make sure as parents and as mentors that we have as much knowledge and implementation in these kids' head moving forward so they'll make the best decisions and the best choices.
Do you, and when we talk about that, what do you see coming out of school? I mean, are the folks in school able to provide some of the guidance there relative to that issue? And I know in the aftermath of school, the aftercare of school is a big challenge as well, right?
Yes, that is correct. I used to teach sixth grade for 14 years over at John A. Shaw Elementary. And that was right before Katrina. And there's a big difference now opposed to what I went through then teaching. You know, the discipline isn't there anymore. And I do believe that discipline is a big part of a kid moving forward with structure in his life. And there's no more discipline inside the school system. You know, if you raise your hand too loud, too high at a kid, you might go to jail. So as the discipline, it really needs to be put back in place. The cell phones in the school, that's another big deterrent which distracts these kids. It's just so many things now that makes it harder to teach a kid. And then the kids don't learn how to write in cursive anymore, and everything is on a computer. It's just a fast track, and we're losing a lot. A lot of kids are falling behind because things are moving too fast for some of them.
If you had if someone said, I can deliver one thing to you for your kids, what would you ask for?
I would ask for more programs to be, for people to invest in more programs like myself, because they're not going to get it in the 6 hours that they're in school. There has to be more involvement and more implementation into these children after school. In other words, in the summers, they need to be into more programming. And, you know, because my old scenario is, if you keep, in order to make it in life, I think they should keep more books in their hands and less balls. Let the balls pay for their education. See, we have to know that everyone's not going to the NFL or the NBA or the Major League, but we can make those sports pay for their education.
Right.
And that's what I'm preaching to kids now.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder whether or not we spend far too much time on some subject matters early onset in school that don't really build the foundational characteristics that we need to really succeed later in school. And, you know,
that's correct.
And you never get that time back, right? I mean, you as an educator would know. You never get it back. It's gone. You've missed it.
Time is not your friend.
Yep.
Time is not your friend. I found that out a long time ago, and you are definitely correct on that one. So that's why we have to – the window isn't that big when children are growing up. So we have to squeeze in as much as we can with the little time that we have.
Yep. Derek, if folks are interested in volunteering or contacting you relative to Don't Stop Dreaming, how would they go about doing that?
Well, anyone can feel freely. Please. I mean, I'm reaching out to the whole society, the whole entire New Orleans, the whole region. You can email me at DerrickHensonSR@Yahoo. And I'll respond very quickly. I'll be more than glad to sit down with you all, talk by phone, by Zoom, whatever it takes, because we all are a movement. And as I said before we close, I told you that last time, and I truly believe that it is not the blind that cannot see. It's the ones who choose to look the other way. We have to stop looking the other way. That's all I say.
Absolutely, for sure. Best of luck to you, Derek Henderson. Don't Stop Dreaming. Truly appreciate the work that you guys do. Stay safe during this storm.
Love you, brother. Appreciate it.
Same to you, man. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
David, tonight's the night that everyone's been waiting for, the presidential debate. There's been a lot of drama leading up to this. Your expectations of the evening?
Well, we're looking at a race right now that is really tight, especially in the critical 6 or 7 swing states. I think Trump probably has a slight lead at this point, but certainly not definite. So for tonight, both of the candidates, this is a really high stakes debate. For Harris, she kind of peaked and about a week or two ago, kind of lost momentum. She needs this to re-jumpstart her campaign, introduce herself to the American public. For Trump, he needs to, in my opinion, stay on focus with the issues. If he talks about the economy, about immigration, and not goes into the personal attacks, public opinion is on his side, and he could do really well tonight. But like I said, we just start from the notion of saying that this is an exceedingly tight race of which both have a lot at stake.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of times the attitude is, I want to come out of this not hurting myself. But in both cases, they have not provided answers to some questions that could potentially hurt themselves, right?
You're absolutely correct here, is that for both of them, let's say for Trump first, where he seems to be mostly getting twisted up right now is his stance on abortion. And if he moves to the center to pick up those few swing voters that are out there, he risks, when his position, he might risk losing part of his base, potentially, although I'm not positive about that. So he's got to worry about that issue. And for Harris, she really has not provided a lot of detail on several of her critical policy programs. And even though she's the vice president, most people still really don't know who she is. And so she needs to do more in terms of laying out, maybe not in the level of detail you would do in legislation, of course, but she has to really do a lot in terms of giving far more detail. I don't know about you. If I actually had my choice in terms of a debate, I would ask them both to show up for an hour and say, one question, one issue, like about how would you deal with, I don't know, inflation or something like that, and make them talk in detail. But they would, of course, never want to do that. And I'm not sure how many people besides you and me would want to listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, I said that earlier. There's just certain things that I would like to get to the bottom of, the economy.
Right.
You know, Trump has talked a lot about tariffs. I would like to see a full-blown explanation about how tariffs actually helps our economy. You know, and then and on the Harris side, she talks about increasing corporate tax rates.
Right.
I'd love to hear how that's going to benefit, you know, the consumer, how that benefits the economy as well. And then ask one other question. Does any of this reduce debt? Doesn't you know, the debt clock just keeps on ticking.
No, I was going to say, I think that's the best question out there is the fact that both of them are proposing tax cuts, tariffs, spending programs. And at the end of the day, the question is, who's going to pay for all of this? And no one's talking about the price tag or who's going to be on the hook for all of this. And then even if what they were proposing was, let's say, revenue neutral, I mean, it wasn't going to change anything, we still owe a heck of a lot of money in terms of national debt. We've got an enormous deficit. We need to address all that. And then issues that they're not going to talk about tonight, for example, is the possible insolvency of Social Security in the next few years. So there's a lot of really pressing, let's just say, on economic stuff that I want to hear more details on in terms of how you're going to solve this or how you're going to approach this. And I would hope if they were to do that, they don't just say, well, we're going to appoint a commission. That's kind of a really weasel answer, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is, I mean, I guess we're going to spend a lot of time talking about abortion. The most recent case sends that to the states. I don't think that there's the votes in either the House or the Senate. They can't pass it through the Congress to go back to something other than that. So it's really, you know, at this level of the executive branch of government, it's almost a wasted conversation at this point because there's nothing going to pass that's going to change the most recent decision. You know,
you're right.
And who knows how much time it'll consume? Because I got to imagine Harris wants to talk about it, and I got to imagine that Trump doesn't want to talk about it much.
I think you're absolutely correct there that these are the kind of issues, like if you talk about issues like abortion, guns, you know, because, of course, we had another, unfortunately, school shooting last week. These are the types of issues that are meant to get the base charged up. You yell abortion, you yell guns, and both sides, it's like yelling fire in a crowded theater. It gets people hot and bothered and excited. But it doesn't really do much in terms of getting us to any type of like policy solutions or doing anything. And I think your point is well taken here, is that no matter who gets selected, it's going to be, I can make an easy prediction, it'll be four more years of gridlock because no one's going to get both House and Senate get enough votes to overcome a filibuster and win the presidency at the same time. So it's going to be, you know, incremental at best, and at worst, nothing gets done.
The whole battle leading up to this about whether the mics were going to stay on or stay off was really about more drama than substance, right? And being able
Correct.
To say some things because some folks like are on too long. They don't know when to shut up in an answer or otherwise. They don't know when to start their answer and end up speaking over people. And what's interesting about that is that we would put ourselves at that level and think that that would be beneficial to voters to decide. It's like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Really? This is where we want to. This is going to be the difference maker.
Yeah. Or over the weekend, I had some of the Sunday morning talk shows on, and the whole focus was on who's going to make a gaffe. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I talk for a living. I'm a professor. I probably misspeak, I don't know, you know, a few times a day. I mean, you speak for a living also. We all make mistakes. Yeah. And I'm thinking and it's just natural being what human is. And to say that the whole focus is going to be concentrating on who's going to misspeak or who's going to make a misstatement or something, it's like, if that's all the election comes down to, that seems to be pretty, at least in my opinion, pretty shallow in terms of how we judge people. Like I said, again, all of us in the course of the day, you know, misspeak, and we should just expect that as part of what happens.
I think one of the challenges that the vice president has, and I talk about this a lot on this show, about her positions changing and trying to qualify that by saying her value system has not. Mm-hmm. But the policy position and the value system are so intertwined. I'm just not sure how that works. I haven't been able to square that up. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I just hadn't been able to square it up, and it continues to mystify me that people are willing to accept that explanation.
No, I agree. I mean, I can understand if people change their positions over time, new information comes in, new evidence, you know, circumstances change. I was going to say people who don't change their positions when new information comes in or circumstances change, those are the people who scare me. You know, it's like,
absolutely.
So to me, if you were just sort of say that, listen, you know, here's what I believe in, and here's why I changed my mind, or explain how the change in policy is actually consistent with the values. Okay, let's do that. And that would be a good discussion, because at the end of the day, that might indicate thoughtfulness, you know. But again, I'm not hearing a lot of it. I think the strategy that she and my governor, Walsh, I'm in Minnesota, have basically taken is to sort of speak at 30,000, you know, feet, you know, altitude, very generalities, so, you know, speak very general and not really get into the specifics of what you're going to do or who's going to pay for it or how's it going to come about. But I'm going to say, to some extent, that's Trump's problem also, too. When you went back talking about tariffs or tax cuts, I mean, they're both, I don't want to say they're, both sides are pandering to their bases, but I think both sides are pandering to their bases.
Yeah, you know, when you consider Bernie Sanders' statement the other day when Kristen Welker put him on the spot about her flip-flopping on issues and wanting to know whether or not she's abandoned her progressive ideology, and he says, no, I don't believe that at all. I think she's just being pragmatic and trying to say the right things in order to get elected. It's like, oh, okay. That answer makes it better.
I was going to say that almost sounds like a breath of honesty. You know, it's like, let's just sort of admit and say, yeah, I'm saying things just to get elected. So I'll give Bernie Sanders, I don't know, an A for honesty, I guess. You know,
it's funny you say that, because my lead in was, who'd have thunk that Bernie Sanders would have been the one that had been the most honest about any of this as we are going through this situation? But you see it on both sides, right? I mean, everybody's got their talking heads out there trying to spin the negative nuances of what a policy may be or position may be. I think the success of tonight is going to be the ability of the two folks that are moderating this debate in the follow-up question and, you know, and having them actually answer it. And when they go off on a tangent, say, excuse me, stop right there. We need to get back to this follow-up answer. And if we don't do that, it's going to be more mush. It'll be meaningless.
Yeah, I think the moderators have to take control of it. And I think the other thing they have to keep in mind is, and a listener should do this tonight too, it's a 90-minute one, listen and notice that about every, I'm going to say 15 to 20 minutes, each of the candidates is going to come back to their two or three basic talking points. And I say that because most people aren't going to listen in, you know, for the entire 90 minutes. You know, they're like working, putting their kids to bed, you know, whatever, you know, real
right. real Americans have to do, you know, like that. And so they know that. And so just watch and see how it's almost like a, I'm going to say 15 to 20 minute loop. And I would like to see the moderators say, well, listen, something like, no, you didn't answer the question. That's your pat, you know, 2 or 3 points. No, I really want you to tell me X or something like that. That would be really refreshing to see that happen.
No doubt. The way I'm going to get through this tonight, David, is that I will have one of my favorite wines with me and a glass of wine in my hand as I'm listening to this, taking notes. That's my secret.
Sometimes when I've watched the debates, I'm not a drinker, but it's I don't know, it's like a glass of water and an aspirin. Some of them give me, I don't know about you, give me headaches.
Oh, no doubt, for sure. David Schultz, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
Same with you. Thank you, sir. Bye.
Thank you. That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland-Hart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, you've heard me talk about my good friend Craig at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, and he joins us. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, how are you?
Doing great, Craig. Best advice for folks right now relative to generators.
Right now, I mean, when it comes to generators, right now, I mean, it's if you haven't really checked your generator, I mean, now's the time to do it. As far as finding a place to probably do repairs, you're probably a little too late for that. You know, for portables and things like that. Now, as far as like service and whole home generators, we're getting a lot of calls in, and unfortunately, you know, we have a schedule and we're trying to squeeze as many people as we can. We're working extended hours, work Sunday. This rain set us back last week. The rain in July set us back with the heat wave. So there's a lot of stuff. And it's not just, you know, not just us as a generator company. There are a lot of other companies out there, and everybody right now, you know, we're putting our customers and we're putting the public first before our own families. I mean, that's what we're doing right now. So tomorrow, we're going to probably start releasing our employees a little bit early so they can go home and do their preparation. So, I mean, the biggest thing for me right now I would tell everybody would be make sure you get your preparations done, food, water, things like that, because it seems like the storm, you know, I was listening to Mike DeTia, he was talking about it yesterday morning, and he's 100% right. This is like a Hurricane Zeta, and that's going back 2020, right? No, I think it was in October. Mm-hmm. It was a late storm. And this is kind of the same path. It's going to be a quick moving storm in and out. You're going to have power outages, you know, up to 3 to 5 days, you know. I mean, that's what we're looking at in some areas. Most likely 1 to 2 days, but, you know, be prepared up to 5 days, you know.
Craig, there's a huge difference between a whole home generator and a portable generator, right? The whole home generators, because I got these texts earlier today, they are set up to be out in the weather, so they can sit in the rain, they can do all of that because the encasement of that generator is designed to do so. These portable generators, though, are different in nature, correct?
That is correct, yeah. So the whole home generator, you know, those should be installed, you know, and inspected. You know, there's a lot more stringent rules when it comes to that, but unfortunately, portable generators are the ones that cause the most injuries, serious injuries, and death. When I say serious injuries, it's, you know, you get carbon monoxide poisoning, and it does get, you know, it cuts the oxygen off to your brain, you know, and then you can have other issues that are associated with lack of oxygen to the brain, which is motor skills and things like that. So, you know, the best thing that, you know, we try to tell people is that, you know, if you can put the generator with a nice extension cord at least 20 feet from your home in the middle of your backyard, that's what you can do. You know, those units, they can get water on them. They're running, they're hot. The water is going to hit, and, you know, you're going to see it steam off. That's what's recommended, you know, 20 feet. But you also need to understand and make sure that you, you know, even if you have, you know, you put it between you and your neighbor's home, you got to be careful because, you know, you can send carbon monoxide into your neighbor's home and not realize it. So that's why we, you know, we require every portable generator we sell, we sell a CO monitor. Well, we give actually a CO monitor away is what we'll call dual smoke detector as well. So we try to make sure that everybody's safe.
Yeah, because if you have a 5-foot side yard on each side, you know, that's only 10 feet. So you can't locate it between two homes and be 20 feet away, right? It doesn't work.
No, sir. No, you can't do that. Like I said, you just want to make sure that, you know, if you do, you know, like I said, I mean, you have people that have seen them on apartments, you know, on the balconies. And I mean, I guess, you know, it's that's a chance, you know, you take. I've seen people put them in the garage, you know, with the garage just cracked open, you know, because look, when I first got into this business, you know, I'm very passionate about what we do. And I remember after Hurricane Zeta, I remember riding around because most of the generators I was putting in was in the Woodland area. And I was riding around listening to all these generators run. And it was a good feeling to know that the people's homes were being backed up. But then the thing that really caught me off guard was I seen a lot of generators with garages that were halfway open with the generator sitting inside with the exhaust pointed on the outside. And that's not really a good way to run those generators, you know?
Craig, a lot of people, especially, again, with portable generators, will try to refill the gas tank while the generator is running. Is that a good practice?
That is not a good practice. So it was after one, I think it was after Hurricane Ida, Zeta. This was when I was still working. It was just pretty much me. I was everything, you know, the CEO, the installer, everything at one time. And I remember I was on a sales call, and I was talking with a homeowner, and the reason why he wanted a home generator, his face, he had discoloration in his face, you know, and we were talking. He said that year before he had an outage, and he's been putting gasoline. He's been having the same generator since Hurricane Katrina, so we're talking probably close to 15 years. And he's always poured, you know, when the generator would run out, or he'd go fill it up while it was running, or he'd shut it off and fill it up and not let it cool down. He did it for about 15 years, and just it just takes that one time, and it was, you know, you don't have enough air blowing by, you know, wind, and you know the oxygen content's just right, and it set it off and actually caused, you know, burned his face and all that. So that's why he wanted a home generator. So that is not advisable, you know. I mean, you're taking a huge risk if you're doing that, you know. I mean, like I said, you might have done it 100 times, but it's always that 101st time that's going to get you, you know.
And also, there's an appropriate gas can to utilize to pour gas into that, not just any type of situation or gas can, right?
Yeah, and look, those gas cans, you know, they are a pain to use, but they're built around the safety side of the of pouring fuel, you know. And when they put those safety features in, that's not somebody that just says, "Hey, I want to make people safe." That's pretty much somebody that was injured, and what they're trying to do is just trying to put something in place so an injury like that doesn't occur. And most of the time it's some type of explosion due to the gas fumes and not using the right, you know, fuel tanks and things like that. So
I've heard a lot of people say that they don't like to turn it off because they run the risk of not being able to start it again. But if you are significantly impaired as it relates to a poor or not so wise practice, you better err on the side of caution in the end, right?
That is correct. You know, I mean, you know, you can, there's so many ways you can run the generator. You can just, you know, if you have a portable generator and you put it outside and you're using it, and let's say, you know, you don't go in your refrigerator a lot, or if you're busy outside doing a few things, well, then let the generator rest. You know, use the generator at nighttime to run the ceiling fans and things like that when you sleep. And then when you get up in the morning, turn it off and let it sit and cool down and fill it back up. You know, I mean, it's just patience. You know, you got to have a little patience in this. You can't rush it.
Because it'll last a lot longer if you do so, for sure. Final thoughts?
That is correct. I mean, you just got to remember, you know, with your whole home generators, shut them down every 24 hours. Check the oil. It's really simple. If you go to our website, craigselectrical.com, or go to our Facebook, craigselectrical.com, we have videos on how to check oil. So it's we've done videos, and we have information on there for homeowners. Now, when it comes time to change oil, it's usually 200 hours, 5W30 full synthetic, right? That's 5W30 full synthetic oil, not conventional motor oil. We don't want that in there. And then when it comes to portable generators, 100 hours. You want to change oil every 100 hours in those things, you know, and it's pretty crucial. Those portable generators are some of the generators that probably get abused the most. They're usually not pulled out until a storm comes, and it's usually gunked up, you know, then inside the fuel. So if you're going to use it and not use it for an extended period of time, add some fuel stabilizer, and that's going to try to maintain that fuel. So next time you use it, it's not going to gum up in that carburetor, you know. So, but like I said, yeah. For everybody, be safe out there.
And operate it before the lights go out, not in the midst of the lights going out.
No,
right?
No.
All right. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I appreciate the time, Newell. And everybody stay safe out there.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. Craigselectrical.com, you can check out for that information, or simply give them a call at 504-677-1023, because when the power goes off, Craig comes on. Welcome back, folks. Trying to get some more answers from that are texts coming in on as it relates to generators. That was some great information that was provided by Craig at Craig's Electrical. He's been really helpful to me, I can tell you. He manages my generator, and it works, and I love every part of it. And you've heard me say this before. A lot of folks have said that this is somewhat of a luxury. I think it's almost a necessity when you think of all that you have to keep up and running in the event of the storm. Times have changed. A lot of things have changed of things that in the construct of a home and what you have in a home and what you have in a business as well. So it will be interesting. But you always stay abreast of this. And if you have a portable generator, just stop and think for a second. Let it rest. Your refrigerators will be fine. You know, they can go many hours once, you know, they go off, as long as you're not in and out of that or in and out of the freezer as well. Got a lot more to talk about. We'll visit with Liz Murrell after the break, the Attorney General on the FEMA flood risk, and bank rate analyst, and Donnie Rouse from Rouse's Grocery. Folks, you've heard me talk about my good friend Craig at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, and he joins us. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, how are you?
Doing great, Craig. Best advice for folks right now relative to generators.
Right now, I mean, when it comes to generators, right now, I mean, it's if you haven't really checked your generator, I mean, now's the time to do it. As far as finding a place to probably do repairs, you're probably a little too late for that. You know, for portables and things like that. Now, as far as, like, service and whole home generators, we're getting a lot of calls in, and unfortunately, you know, we have a schedule, and we're trying to squeeze as many people as we can. We're working extended hours. We work Sunday. This rain set us back last week. The rain in July set us back with the heat wave, so there's a lot of stuff, and it's not just, you know, not just us as a generator company. There are a lot of other companies out there, and everybody right now, you know, we're putting our customers and we're putting the public first before our own families. I mean, that's what we're doing right now. So tomorrow we're going to probably start releasing our employees a little bit early so they can go home and do their preparation. So, I mean, the biggest thing for me right now I would tell everybody would be make sure you get your preparations done, food, water, things like that, because it seems like the storm – you know, I was listening to Mike Dettier, he was talking about it yesterday morning, and he's 100% right. This is like a Hurricane Zeta, and that's going back 2020, right? No, I think it was in October. Mm-hmm. It was a late storm. And this is kind of the same path. It's going to be a quick-moving storm, in and out. You're going to have power outages, you know, up to 3 to 5 days, you know? I mean, that's what we're looking at in some areas. Most likely 1 to 2 days, but, you know, be prepared up to 5 days, you know?
Craig, there's a huge difference between a whole home generator and a portable generator, right? The whole home generators, because I got these texts earlier today, they are set up to be out in the weather. So they can sit in the rain, they can do all of that because the encasement of that generator is designed to do so. These portable generators, though, are different in nature, correct?
That is correct, yeah. So the whole home generator, you know, those should be installed, you know, and inspected. You know, there's a lot more stringent rules when it comes to that. But unfortunately, portable generators are the ones that cause the most injuries, serious injuries, and death. When I say serious injuries, it's, you know, you get carbon monoxide poisoning, and it does get, you know, it cuts the oxygen off to your brain, you know, and then you can have other issues that are associated with lack of oxygen to the brain, which is motor skills and things like that. So, you know, the best thing that, you know, we try to tell people is that, you know, if you can put the generator with a nice extension cord at least 20 feet from your home in the middle of your backyard, that's what you can do. You know, those units, they can get water on them. They're running, they're hot. The water is going to hit, and you know, you're going to see it steam off. That's what's recommended, you know, 20 feet. But you also need to understand and make sure that you know, even if you have, you know, you put it between you and your neighbor's home, you got to be careful because, you know, you can send carbon monoxide into your neighbor's home and not realize it. So, that's why we, you know, we require and every generator, every portable generator we sell, we sell a CO monitor. Well, we give actually a CO monitor away is what we'll call dual smoke detector as well. So we try to make sure that everybody's safe.
Yeah, because if you have a 5-foot side yard on each side, you know, that's only 10 feet. So you can't locate it between two homes and be 20 feet away, right? It doesn't work.
No, sir. No, sir. No, you can't do that. Like I said, you just want to make sure that, you know, if you do, you know, like I said, I mean, you have people that have seen them on apartments, you know, on the balconies. And I mean, I guess, you know, that's a chance, you know, you take. I've seen people put them in the garage, you know, with the garage just cracked open, you know, because look, when I first got into this business, you know, I'm very passionate about what we do. And I remember after Hurricane Zeta, I remember riding around because most of the generators I was putting in was in the Woodland area. And I was riding around listening to all these generators run. And it was a good feeling to know that the people's homes are being backed up. But then the thing that really caught me off guard was I've seen a lot of generators with garages that were halfway open with the generator sitting inside with the exhaust pointed on the outside. And that's not really a good way to run those generators, you know?
Craig, a lot of people, especially, again, with portable generators, will try to refill the gas tank while the generator is running. Is that a good practice?
That is not a good practice. So it was after Hurricane Ida, Zeta. This was when I was still working. It was just pretty much me. I was everything, you know, the CEO, the installer, everything at one time. And I remember I was on a sales call, and I was talking with a homeowner, and the reason why he wanted a home generator, his face. He had discoloration in his face, you know, and we were talking. He said that year before he had an outage, and he's been putting gasoline. He's been having the same generator since Hurricane Katrina, so we're talking probably close to 15 years. And he's always poured, you know, when the generator would run out, or he'd go fill it up while it was running, or he'd shut it off and fill it up and not let it cool down. He did it for about 15 years, and it just takes that one time, and it was, you know, you don't have enough air blowing by, you know, wind, and you know the oxygen content's just right, and it set it off and actually caused, you know, burned his face and all that. So that's why he wanted a home generator. So that is not advisable, you know. I mean, you're taking a huge risk if you're doing that, you know. I mean, like I said, you might have done it 100 times, but it's always that 101st time that's going to get you, you know.
And also, there's an appropriate gas can to utilize to pour gas into that, not just any type of situation or gas can, right?
Yeah, and look, those gas cans, you know, they are a pain to use, but they're built around the safety side of the of pouring fuel, you know. And when they put those safety features in, that's not somebody that just says, hey, I want to make people safe. That's pretty much somebody that was injured, and what they're trying to do is just trying to put something in place so an injury like that doesn't occur. And most of the time it's some type of explosion due to the gas fumes and not using the right, fuel tanks and things like that. So
I've heard a lot of people say that they don't like to turn it off because they run the risk of not being able to start it again. But if you are significantly impaired as it relates to a poor or not so wise practice, you better err on the side of caution in the end, right?
And that is correct. You know, I mean, you know, you can, there's so many ways you can run the generator. You can just, you know, if you have a portable generator and you put it outside and you're using it, and let's say, you know, you don't go in your refrigerator a lot, or if you're busy outside doing a few things, well, then let the generator rest. You know, use the generator at nighttime to run the ceiling fans and things like that when you sleep. And then when you get up in the morning, turn it off and let it sit and cool down and fill it back up. You know, I mean, it's just patience. You know, you got to have a little patience in this. You can't rush it.
Because it'll last a lot longer if you do so, for sure. Final thoughts?
That is correct. I mean, you just got to remember, you know, with your whole home generators, shut them down every 24 hours, check the oil. It's really simple. If you go to our website, craigselectrical.com, or go to our Facebook, craigselectrical.com, we have videos on how to check oil. So it's we've done videos, and we have information on there for homeowners. Now, when it comes time to change oil, it's usually 200 hours. 5W30 full synthetic, right? That's 5W30 full synthetic oil, not conventional motor oil. We don't want that in there. And then when it comes to portable generators, 100 hours. you want to change the oil every 100 hours in those things, you know, and it's pretty crucial. Those portable generators are some of the generators that probably get abused the most. They're usually not pulled out until a storm comes, and it's usually gunked up, you know, then inside the oil, the fuel. So if you're going to use it and not use it for an extended period of time, add some fuel stabilizer, and that's going to try to maintain that fuel. So next time you use it, it's not going to gum up in that carburetor, you know. So, but like I said, yeah, for everybody, be safe out there.
And operate it before the lights go out, not in the midst of the lights going out.
No,
right?
No.
All right. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. I appreciate the time, Newell. And everybody stay safe out there.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. Craigselectrical.com, you can check out for that information, or simply give him a call at 504-677-1023, because when the power goes off, Craig comes on. Welcome back, folks. Trying to get some more answers from that are texts coming in on as it relates to generators. There was some great information that was provided by Craig at Craig's Electrical. He's been really helpful to me, I can tell you. He manages my generator, and it works, and I love every part of it. And you've heard me say this before. A lot of folks have said that this is somewhat of a luxury. I think it's almost a necessity when you think of all that you have to keep up and running in the event of the storm. Times have changed. A lot of things have changed of things that in the construct of a home and what you have in a home and what you have in a business as well. So it will be interesting. But you always stay abreast of this. And if you have a portable generator, just stop and think for a second. Let it rest. Your refrigerators will be fine. You know, they can go many hours once, you know, they go off, as long as you're not in and out of that, or in and out of the freezer as well. Got a lot more to talk about. We'll visit with Liz Murrell after the break, the Attorney General, on the FEMA flood risk, and bank rate analysts, and Donnie Rouse from Rouse's Grocery.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.